Hello and welcome to Real Chat with Kat, the podcast dedicated to igniting your entrepreneurial spirit and empowering you to conquer new horizons. In this podcast, we chat with inspiring entrepreneurs on their journey to success through some amazingly insightful and expansive conversations. These episodes thrive on thought-provoking chats where our guests fearlessly explore their path to success, sharing their experiences, failures, and triumphs. No topic is off limits as we deep dive into the talked about and not so talked about pieces it takes to build a business, overcome limiting beliefs, deal with personal struggles, and everything in between that shapes our lives and our businesses. I'm your host, Kat Polsonelli, creator and founder at The Lotus Effect, where we believe that success is not just about strategies and tactics, it's about cultivating a powerful mindset and creating customized business operations that align with you and your true purpose. Whether it's mastering time management, improving productivity, enhancing leadership skills, or simply fostering a growth-oriented mindset, we'll provide you with the tools and strategies to flourish in both your business and personal life. I'm so excited to have you join us today in this episode, so get ready to feel empowered and inspired as we learn together and from one another on how to rise above challenges, break through limitations, and unlock our full potential. Let's dive in. Hello, hello, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of Real Chat with Kat. I am so excited to have you guys here with me today, and I have an awesome guest with me. So, Ms. Cheryl Whitehall, do us a favor and introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what it is that you do, and what got you into your space.
Well, thanks, Kat. Yeah, awesome to be here. I'm a functional movement specialist. And what that means is I work with people who have some kind of goal around improving their movement. So it could be everything from, you know, I've just had my hip replaced and I want to get back to walking well to, you know, my golf game. Like, seriously, the golf pro saying this and I don't know how to do what he's asking. So I can help them, you know, find their own kind of the word is self-organization, so that they can do the things that they want to do. And, you know, when people sort of say, so you're just doing movement, then it's like, well, name me something in life that isn't about movement, you know, like, right. It's so central that we take it for granted until, of course, something like balance, we start to lose it, or, you know, we're noticing, in fact, I'm not moving in the way I want to. So that's what I do. You know, I got into the space. I came from a background of adult education and a little bit of academic sort of applied work. But I was always kind of the weird kid in the room. You know, I'd be sitting like in a university, you know, gathering, and I'm sort of like, where's the body? Like, where is the body in all of this? Like, you know, interested in transformational learning, but it's like to talk about it without, like, including how the body is, like, I mean, your brain is part of your body, right? It's intimately part of how we learn. Was just like, is no one noticing that we never talk about the body? So I really did just like literally have to move myself into another space. And so was really fortunate to connect with a couple of really pivotal teachers, which is, you know, it's awesome when a teacher can kind of go, no, you really should go down this path. And so, you know, followed my curiosity through ultimately a Feldenkrais practitioner program. I'm an integral master coach. So it's sort of a whole version of you know, development that includes the body, and partnered it with my love of Aikido, you know, so I'm just on the cusp of, you know, getting ready for my black belt test. So I've been doing that for 10 years. And nice. So it's really like weaving a whole bunch of really fun things together that are like, okay, this is what I need to be now that I've grown up, you know, at 55. Now I've grown up and I know what I want to be. Yeah.
That is so awesome. And congratulations on the black belt. That is super cool.
Yeah, it's coming. I'm training and then recovering from training. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, because I've heard that is intense.
I know a couple people that have it. I have not been in it. I always thought it was really cool, but so that's a heck of an accomplishment to be striving for as well. Now, I want to clarify for people as well, when you talk about movement and mobility and how that works within the body, this is not the same as what people would consider traditional therapy, because I know that a lot of people are going to go immediate to, oh, so it's like physical therapy. No, it's a little bit different, right? So I would love to hear your take on people understanding what the difference is in the movement and what it is you provide and what somebody would think of when they're thinking of like physical therapy, because yes, right, that has movement in it. It's got exercises, stretches and stuff like that, but very different. I'm sure that there are some similarities, but I would love your take on that so that people understand that there's a difference in those two pieces.
Yeah, no, totally. And, you know, I'm totally a fan of physiotherapy, have definitely leaned, you know, in my training, you know, midlife training career on a good PT. So, you know, so my experience of PT and my understanding of it, you know, they're often really focused on very specific, like strengthening something. If you've had an injury, like supporting recovery, because often the way you have to immobilize yourself means things atrophy, right? Your muscles shrink. And so they're really working on the pieces that they know will help you come back to your mobility or your balance goals. The approach I take is a little bit different in that, you know, there's a couple things. I tend not to look at one piece of the body. I tend to look at the whole system and to look at movement as fundamentally the expression of our brain and nervous system. And so with that kind of lens, you know, rather than, I mean, strength building might be part of it, but I tend to work with clients on things like clarity of movement. So like yesterday working with, you know, just an amazing older client really wants to like hang on, stay active, and basically brought her fitness program to me and said, okay, can you Feldenkrais this? Because I, you know, there's many things that she just actually can't do. And it's not because she's so weak. Her personal sort of way to coordinate herself, what we would call the motor plan. So the little predictive map in our brain that says, like, if you've ever watched a child try to grab the sippy cup and then bring it to their mouth without spilling, like they're literally building their motor plan about how to get that cup to the mouth. And there's lots of errors, lots of, you know, that's that original motor plan that as an adult, unless you're really not paying attention, you can grab your coffee, you can grab your bottle, right, and drink from it. That's because we've built that map and then we've done it 1,000 times. So we know we have to think about it. So, you know, with this client, for all the work that we had done where she had the motor plan built, she could do those exercises no problem. I had nothing to say to her other than here's some details about working with it, given what's going on in your body. But for other ones, like she didn't know how to coordinate herself in order to do it. And so this is where people try to apply more strength to make up for what's not clear. And so, so I really worked with her to sort of say, you know, before you do these one-legged stretches, you need to build your base of support so that you feel it, because she would sort of launch into it and then, you know, wobble and fall off. That's not a strength issue. That's a, you know, her motor plan around balancing on one foot is not as developed, right? Because frankly, who does that, right? In your adult life, how often are you standing in line at the checkout and standing on one foot and then standing on the other? You know, like we're kind of in a use it or lose it brain universe. So especially at the age, it's not that we can't do things. It's that we haven't done it enough that it got pruned out in favor of whatever we do most of the time. Right.
How interesting. And I love that. I never thought about, you know, like your brain having its own mapping system of how it does certain things. I mean, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, I talk about with my clients and on the podcast as well about habitual thinking, right? Which is very similar, right? It's that not even really having to think about it, which is why some of us get like so stuck in the things that we're doing. And then like, we don't even realize it's done. Or you drive home and you're like, I don't remember which road I took to get here, right? Like it's that built in, I mean, that, but that's so neat because I didn't think about the mind mapping the way that you stand or the way that you balance or the way that you pick something up on a regular basis, or if you've never done it before. Like that makes a lot of sense. So do you think that people that are getting into maybe like wanting to exercise, for those especially that maybe have never done it before, that there are some steps that they should be taking like pre-workout before they get into the gym? I know a lot of people like, you know, jump right into it and they're like, oh, I'm going to lift weights, or I'm going to go run, or I'm going to go do this. But is there something that you suggest to people like that then as well to, like you said, kind of like redefine or lay out that new map of something that they haven't done like that, that, goodness gracious, I mean, if you do something, pull something the wrong way, lift something the wrong way, you could detriment your back, your knees, like anything that, you know, could take you down for weeks or months because you didn't have that in place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I, you know, I think one of the core things that, you know, when I work with clients over a length of time, they really start to build a capacity to kind of listen inside themselves to sense what's going on and to learn from it, you know. And so if we take something like, you know, going in and starting like a hand weight program, one of the real challenges with that, I mean, everyone talks about posture, but what's more fundamental, I would say, than posture is like, how do you maintain your balance? You know, it's one of our earliest reflexes to protect ourselves from falling. So like if you kind of drop a baby suddenly, they have a reflexive response that they do to protect themselves. So it's really one of our earliest reflexes that's working all the time. So if your balance is uncertain, if, you know, like this is one experience I have killer balance on my right leg. I have to work for balance of my left leg. It's part of my general orientation. I'm very right-sided, you know? And so I know that I need to really connect in myself about several key things to do any balance work on the left side before I do something like, you know, lunges or, you know, some of the split squat kind of fitness moves. You know, I used to just like totally, you know, try to do these things and I had no personal balance, you know, like back in my 20s and 30s. So I really gave up on doing all that strength work because I literally like would have to hang on to go up and go down. And it sort of defeats the purpose of, you know, receiving your whole body weight. So, so just developing that ability to be able to learn from your own movement experience and to be able to make choices about that works better when I use my whole foot or I'm really focused on, you know, balancing between my big toe and my second toe. Like I really can find the stability there that lets me move in a way that's freer, that I'm not fighting for balance or sort of fighting against my own movement. That makes it so much easier because it's part of like, if they haven't done it before or they haven't done it for 20 years, or whatever, like that beginning place gets really rough because there's all of this, you know, sort of noise in the way going on that in no way lets them enjoy the movement. Like there's just no joy in taking up a new task, whether it's weights or, you know, cycling or a new sport or anything, because they're literally sort of getting in their own way. So definitely like, you know, and I've worked with a few people like this, taking kayaking lessons and what the teacher is telling them makes no sense and doesn't fit the body type. And so it's like, okay, well, let's see what they told you and then find the way to make it work for you.
Yeah.
So that they can start to feel what a good stroke feels like because it, you know, I don't know about you. I do have discipline, you know, 10 years in a martial art and some martial arts before that, but if it's not fun, you know, I don't really stick with a lot of things.
Yeah.
If it's miserable to do for the first 6 months, right? Like it's a rare person that will just like, I'm just going to do this and persist past all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's finding how it feels good, how it feels easy, how you feel like joy in your body. when you're doing the movement, when you can connect with that quality, then you do want to learn stuff. Then you do want to do, you know, new things or set those kind of what we would call typical fitness goals, because it feels good and it feels like empowering and achieving to get there, not just like, well, I've got to, you know, grit down and power through it. And we kind of have a social conditioning that, you know, we've got to double down. We've got to, you know, it's hard. We've got to grit our teeth and get through. It's like, you know, there's another way to get there.
And I love that you say that too, because, you know, I talk about this a lot with my clients, especially, you know, is not putting yourself in that box, because you know how you want to do things, or you already kind of have an understanding on how things are going to work. And it's so funny that you were talking about, you know, understanding your balance and getting that kind of set up and right, and knowing that, you know, when you're doing an exercise, or if you're doing, like you're saying, the kayaking or anything like that, like really feeling into how it works for you. And it reminded me of a story. So a couple of years ago, my husband took me to go snowboarding, which I've never done before. I have water skied, but snowboarding is totally different. Okay. And so when we got there, I was like, okay, so what am I supposed to do? Like, am I supposed to stand a certain way? Like, do my knees need to bend? Like, I kept asking all these questions. I love my husband. He is not the best trainer, okay, at all. He's like, you just put your feet down and you use your toes. And I'm like, what do you mean you use your toe? I can't move my ankle. It's attached to the board. How am I supposed to use my toes? Yeah. He was a horrible instructor. I love you, babe. But what was really interesting was, as we were riding up to the top, I was watching other people that were boarding, and I'm like, okay, so they're leaning, they're balancing, like, okay, I kind of get the idea. But what was interesting is once I started getting the hang of it, I noticed that the way my husband did it and the way that I do it is actually really different. So he could stand really straight, and he literally could use his feet to kind of rock back and forth. I, knowing that I've always played sports and stuff, have always been a little lower to the ground. I'm also only 5'2", people, so there's not a lot of room up above. But so what I realized was when I was snowboarding, the more that I had my knees bent, the easier it was for me to move with my body versus just my feet. Every time that I tried to move just my, I plowed. Every time. It did not work. So I love that, because that makes so much sense. And we think about it, when I'm talking about business and I'm talking about personal development and I'm talking about movement in your life and stuff like that, that like, it doesn't have to be a cookie cutter way, but I never thought about it. So you shared that story about how it can be the same way in your mobility. It can be the same way when you're exercising or when you're learning a sport or doing something different, that it doesn't have to be exactly how somebody else is doing it, because more than likely, especially if you're older and you haven't tried it out before, right? It's not, your body's just not going to move that way.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And, you know, thanks for really naming that, because I do just say, you know, like every person I see is unique. And I use what I call a co-discovery kind of learning model, so that I might have ideas about what an ideal movement would look like, or what high quality movement would look like, and have some criteria about that, so that there is something to look at. But, you know, it's a real question of, you know, just taking your own story to say, you know, let's say in your childhood, you fell off a swing going backwards once and hit your head. And so what I find in my work is that event stays kind of recorded in the nervous system and brain as an event that's important, that, you know, affected safety. And so there could be a small way that you hold your neck that's a remnant of that event, because that helped protect you, that you're still holding on to because, you know, it worked, right? The brain's always, you know, anxious to like gobble up, like, if this works, we're going to use that habit, right?
Yeah.
And so that kind of, you know, it's like an earned habit that it was really important at one time, but it may not serve you in your snowboarding methodology, or, you know, the way that your husband does it. If he's got different personal history, he can stand straight up and sort of negotiate that. your prior conditioning, you know, be playing sports, you know, say you have, you know, you'll organize yourself in the way that feels right for you. And so I do very much work with people like to discover that rather than tell them. And so this is what I find kind of is a big divide between physiotherapy and what I do. Like, I've been told really good things by people that have been helpful, but sometimes it's like, I know you're telling me this, I can't do that. You know, and the response is kind of like, we'll do the exercises and then you will. And it's like, but if I can't even get my body into the position, like, that's not going to go well. Right. And so it would be like saying, okay, so that's a real constraint. I'm curious about how it works. Is it like this when you do this? Is it like this? Like, let's explore the nature of the constraint. Maybe it's for real and it's just not possible, but often it's this kind of hidden habit that's going on that we, you know, it's just us, right? I've always held my neck this way. Like, I don't even think about it. And that might be changeable. And so that's how we use movement to see what is possible. Can we just expand the options so that you can do this or that, rather than always assuming something else you're not doing is superior in some way? It's like, you got here to today. So what you're doing is functional at some level, right? It's serving some kind of purpose. But as we grow, change, have other goals, sometimes we need to look at how is that brought together? And can we change your sense of yourself right down to the nervous system so that just more is available and easily available, right? Like that you can freely express yourself, whether it's on the slope or in a relationship or whatever the verb is, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, what I've always found really fascinating as well is movement plays such a big part in everybody's everyday life, and we don't even realize it, right? We have so many people that have desk jobs where you're sitting constantly throughout the day, which puts a lot of stress on the body. It's one of the reasons why I bought a sit stand desk so that I could constantly move and be able to have that mobility. But, you know, I've had a lot of people in the podcast as well that talk about when you don't have a lot of movement or when you're not doing stuff for your body, you can also get emotions that become stuck as well. And those emotions can also prevent you essentially from being able to do certain things, or like certain stretches are extremely hard or it causes pain or emotions come up and you're like, all right, I don't like that. Done with that one. Right. Like, I've heard about, and I haven't tried this one, but I've heard about somatic yoga and being able to move in certain directions that allow for releases. And it's so interesting when you take the moment to become more present in your day to day, and you start to become aware of like, oh, okay, the weight that's in my shoulders and the tension is actually from the stress because of this. These headaches that I'm constantly getting is because I'm still dealing with this, right? Or I haven't released said thing. Or like lower back pain and hip pain, that is such a big one for a lot of people. And they're like, oh, it's just, you know, it's age. And it's like, but is it? Is it really?
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's, you know, like, I tend to look at things like every kind of influence that we've had is conditions our habits, right? And it, we out of all of the things that we learned, you know, when we were younger about how to get along, not just physically, but in our families, you know, it builds a sense of ourself or a sense of our identity that our choices born out of how do I cope, survive, thrive in what my experience is when we're fundamentally dependent on others for our well-being. And so those choices sort of come together to become like, this is who I am. But that was all sort of a fluid, creative, you know, choice by choice, move by move sort of creation. But at a certain point, we sort of go, well, that's it. That's me. And we don't know that we could continue to change that, right? Like the fundamental process of neuroplasticity, you know, and that relates to everything, not just sensations, but what we feel, our experiences, our movement, our thoughts, all of that is an ongoing sort of change. And I was reading a source recently that said, you know, over 10% of our connections in our brain change every 6 weeks. So we are like 10% different every 6 weeks. So, you know, like it's a fact that that happens, but we sort of get hooked into like version 1.5. So, you know, like if I think back to, you know, late 20s, it's like going through the end of my first marriage, but also waking up to karate and, you know, going to grad school. Like there was this huge time of change and evolution for me that fundamentally moved me out of a lot of the things that I understood about myself up until the age 28, right? Mm-hmm. And so we tend to look at those sort of peak events, but every day we're doing things that allows that possibility, because we kind of like a nice, neat story with a bow on it. We want to capture, no, this is how I am. Like, I like coffee. I don't like tea. I like, you know, hiking. I don't like hockey. I like, you know, like all of those preferences create a story about us. But, you know, what I find is it's so much simpler to bring people into movement to explore what's another possibility, what's another thing that also, like, it's not to replace, but to say you could be this and you could be this, right? And that there's really no sort of end point, I guess, death, but, you know, to how we can grow, how we can change, how we can evolve that story of who we are. So, you know, a lot less about, you know, who I am, full stop, you know, tie a bow on it, much more about who am I becoming day by day, move by move. And so there's a lot of hope in that, I think, because if we continue in the process and don't put a lot of energy into, like, I've got to anchor myself as this and I can't be anything but this, then possibilities start to open up, even in the face of like life-changing events, you know, and injuries and things like that.
Yeah. And that makes so much sense. And, you know, I wanted to, we're going to rewind real quick. So neuroplasticity, I freaking love. So FYI, you guys need to Google this if you don't know what it is, because this is the coolest thing ever. That is how your habits change. It's how you can literally recreate different things in the body. It's how you can take a negative situation to turn it to a positive so that you are rewiring how the brain is structured. It is the coolest thing. Sorry. Okay. Off that tangent, because I want to go back to this. But neuroplasticity to me, when I realized what that was, it was like, oh, okay, now I want to try it, right? So then I was like purposely like, okay, what could I change? What could I do differently? What can I force my body to do? How can I? But anyway, when you're talking about the body and the different things that we can do and how we're always changing, I love that you said, you know, we don't necessarily need to be this one specific version and tie a bow around it, but consider this beautiful evolution of constantly changing and seeing what is next, right? I mean, if you think about it, there are foods that I liked when I was little that I no longer like. I don't continue to say that I like them because I just don't care for them, right? I was never a coffee person. Now I enjoy coffee, but I still love my teas, right? So like I get to flip-flop, and I had had someone that was on my podcast not too long ago. His name is Maury Zelkovich, and he was actually saying the same thing when he was talking about his beliefs. And I loved it because it immediately made me think of him when you were talking about allowing this fluidity in your life. As he said, what I believe in this moment, what I believe of me as of today. And I thought, how cool is that, to think of yourself in that way instead of, oh, no, no, like this has to be this. Oh, no, I have to do this. No, I enjoy only this, right? Because I noticed that, again, like we said in the very beginning, it really goes back to how your brain sees things as well, right? So if you're constantly telling it one thing, like I have back pain, I'm always going to have back pain. You're going to have back pain when you get older. You're probably going to have back pain, right? If you're constantly telling yourself, I don't like cold weather. I used to say that for the long, I hate cold weather. Cold weather sucks. It's horrible. Well, guess what? Every time that it gets a little bit cold, you're going to hate life, right? I'm not saying that like all of a sudden you're going to be like 20 degrees warmer and be like, cold is amazing. But you can reprogram the thoughts, which is reprogram the body on how it responds to the different things in your life, the different things, like you said, when you deal with traumas, when you deal with life-changing situations, there's ways that you can manipulate the way that the brain intakes that information and then how it in outputs the result that's coming from it as well. And you can change that. I used to be someone that in the moment with my kids, when certain things would happen, I would be like, oh my God, I'm so flustered. Like, okay, I've got to do this and I got to do this and all the things. Recently, my oldest one had a motorcycle accident. And when he called me, he's okay, by the way. When he called me, I was like, okay, what is going on? He's like, I think I broke my foot. And I'm like, of course you did. I love my son. But instead of like, okay, what am I going to do? How do I get to the hospital? What's the quickest way to do this? I just got off the phone. I knew that he was okay. I knew where he was going. And my husband's like, okay, what are we doing? And I'm like, I can only do this. I can only do that. He is this far away. I know that I have to take care of this first. I know that he's going to reach out to me when he gets, like, it was so much more in balance. It was so much more peaceful. It was still a stressful situation. Instead of allowing that stress to ramp up to the top and not be able to think clearly, I was able to reprogram myself to be like, okay, what can I control? What can I not control? And then how can we handle the situation from there? So it's really unique when you talk about that, that you really can change the body, both physically and mentally, in the way that it deals with things or the way that it handles things, and then what it allows the body and the brain to do moving forward.
Yeah, no, and I think you're really naming, you know, we talked before about habits, and so people think, oh, I just need to make new habits. And it's like, we absolutely need habits, right? Like, I can't do everything in complete mindfulness. And anybody who says, well, you can, it's like, no, at 6 a.m., like the coffee is being made by habit, right? Like there's, you know, like, and I lean on those, but you're talking about a capacity. And this is one that I do find adults really can struggle with, is to really allow yourself to be in a learning zone where I don't know the answer. I don't know what's coming next. And I have, you know, I had a teacher that would say, you know, just because I don't know what's happening doesn't mean I know nothing. Right. So you enter into the moment with the resources that you have. And so your story was a good illustration to say, okay, so like, that's a bit of a showstopper. And here's what I know, here's what I can do, here's what I'm going to do, like, to enter into that space with some resourcefulness that and attention, that rather than spinning into all of the worst case catastrophizing, you know, sort of things, is that you could say, okay, I'm going to bring my attention here, then here, and then I can be free to maybe jump in my car and go to the thing, and, you know, whatever. It changes, you know, people talk about resilience, but it changes what's available to you and the creative problem solving modality that you can access. But when we're, you know, sharply dropped into a fear response, fear reaction, and for sure, you know, if people are living, you know, past trauma, like, often your resources become like shut away from you because the kind of fear reaction survival, and like, all, you know, there's not just fight, flight, or freeze, but like fawn, and like there's, you know, five other sort of, you know, that we go into a mode of coping, but that's not a resourceful sort of place. It may be necessary. It may be what's possible. This is the best it gets right now in what I function, but it's really sort of saying, if you can learn some ways to be with what's uncertain, you know, like, if you think about the last time you learned anything, for me, it's always like putting together something. You know, I bought this cute little deer set with lights, like, for Christmas. And then the confusion of following instructions that don't really make any sense, you know, is like, how do you hang out in the place of confusion so you can actually get the head on the body and the ears and the thing, you know, and all of that stuff without it becoming something else? It's just a place of, I don't know. And I always look to kids as my role model because they have no issue not knowing. Right. Like when they're figuring something out, you know, they make mistakes, they try things, like, there can be, you know, I've also seen children sort of lose it because they can't do a thing, but But there's much less like self, you know, self-punishing, self-criticism. They're just playing, they're just learning, they're trying this out, they're trying that out. And so a lot of what I really try to equip people is, how do we bring that spirit in to your place of limitation, to the place, you know, I think about, yes, I see many people with low back pain, and it's always amazing when I get them to move in a way that, you know, it's small enough, it's gentle enough, but they go, oh, that didn't hurt. And then that's almost worse. Like they kind of go into a, I don't even know what just happened there, because their brain map got radically disrupted. And so, yeah. So it's really helping them, you know, be okay to be in that state of confusion and to, you know, build their reliance on like, I have resources to do something from here, which is so huge. Like I, you know, was studying this work and then we went into the whole pandemic and the lockdown, and it just really punctuated for me, like when life is genuinely unpredictable, you know, and things happen that are radically beyond your control, that gee, it's helpful to have this kind of capacity, this kind of relationship with yourself that says, okay, so apparently I just tested positive for COVID. And I have, you know, like two things in my fridge, you know, and so how am I going to troubleshoot this particular piece when I don't know what it's going to happen to me, when I don't know, you know, it's like, we're kind of living in that era where, you know, anybody who's 100% certain about things, it's like, I don't know what world you're living in, but I don't think that's quite possible anymore, where there's always something that is really messing with our plan for what's going to happen today even.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, I feel like that is life, right? Like, I don't know about anybody else, but I can't tell you how many times I've made a plan and something else happens. Like every single time. Like I had the perfect plan. I had it all laid out. Like even when my kids were younger and I would try to like, okay, we're going to go here and we're going to go hike. And then we're going to eat lunch and then we're going to do this. And like something would happen. Somebody fall in the water. Now we're drenched. And I'm like, great. Okay. I have no extra clothes. How are we going to dry out? Like there's always something, but you do have to, like you said, it is building up that resilience and being okay with the unknown and knowing that like you're going to figure it out. Because if you can step more into that light, it does take the stress down so much more, because then it's not panic, then it's not survival. And a lot of times I've noticed, especially lately, since I've worked on that, like there are situations that I find myself in that I laugh at. And my husband's like, what are you doing? I'm like, because it's funny. Like, what am I going to do? Right? Like I've been outside cleaning stuff before, go to put the hose down. This is just me. And put the hose down wrong, you know, so it hits the back of it, sprays right back in your face. Yeah. And I'm like ready to go somewhere. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, you know? But like, I know that before that would have totally ruined my day. Like that would have pissed me off. I'd have been like, great, now what the hell am I going to do? I got to go back in here all over the place. I got to go do this. And now I just laugh at it. And it's so, I'm sure people think that I'm crazy sometimes with things I laugh at. But one, laughter is the best medicine. But two, it really, like, what is the point in freaking out in certain situations? I understand that there are certain situations that call for like, holy crap, what is going on? And everything feels like it's falling apart. And I get that. But there's a lot of things that we deal with every single day that it's like, if you could learn to let go of the stress, if you could learn to let go of the, holy, like, seriously, this just had to happen to me, kind of an attitude, it really does help you get over it, laugh it off, and then like go on to the next thing versus it continuing to be like this emotional baggage that just comes with you all day long, which like you said, it does have an effect on the body throughout the day and then throughout the weeks, because now you already feel like, well, this sucked, right? And we get in this cycle, which just continues and continues. And then we wonder why we start to have physical problems.
Yeah. No, and it's, you know, like, I always laugh when people say, well, you just work with the body, right? And it's like, so what do you do with your brain? You know, when you're doing, like, you know, like we're one thing, right? You're one brain, yeah. one nervous system, one body. And you know, what I love in this work, like you talked earlier about, you know, like it's, this is not like, you know, therapy session or somatic therapy. And like, I agree with that in the sense that I probably work much more in the coaching lane, you know, having been trained on it, to sort of say, let's work with what's here today and what, how we can move forward. But, mm-hmm. you know, a really good example that's coming to mind for me. So I volunteer to, you know, at the Aikido club that I train at, and it's sort of set up that higher ranked students are always helping lower ranked students. And so one of the projects we have is Aikido is this lovely fluid martial art. Like, often women really enjoy it because it's not based on physical strength, you know, like some of the arts, it really helps to be really strong, right? So so size matters less, but it does require learning to fall, learning to roll on the mats. And again, like, it's sort of like falling for fun. Okay, let's take that on. And so, you know, we have people of various ages that start, but I'm always like, I said to my teacher, you know, I just like to fully like revolutionize how we teach rolling, because typically we set people to roll forwards or backwards and they don't do it well and it hurts. And they learn sort of to flinch in a way and contract themselves. And it's the very opposite of what they need to do. Like, they need to kind of expand. It would be helpful if everyone learned to laugh as they rolled, so they could just like kind of splay themselves out. And so we started a process to say, so job number one is to make the floor friendly. And so how do we do that, right? I mean, it is a matted floor, so it is softer than a like cement, but mm-hmm. You know, so various ways that, you know, part of it's for the mind, but a lot of it is for the nervous system and the sensation of, you know, one thing we do is like this big fat, if you imagine the biggest teddy bear you could win at the fair, and then the teddy bear rolls around on its back and its hands, you know, we set up this very low stakes way to like, this is how you can slide all the way to the floor. You don't fall at all. And then you can come up the same way, so that there's no negative consequence, right? Mm-hmm. And to do a whole bunch of those preliminary steps, so that by the time we get them into the shape to actually, you know, duck their head and throw their feet over and roll, they have a whole bunch of these experiences that are like, we're just bringing that into this form rather than this form or this form or this form. And so I, you know, I checked in recently because we had, you know, middle-aged woman come, not athletic, you know, has issues with knees. And she's like, oh no, rolling's really fun. I really enjoy it. I'm like, oh, great. That's the proof in the pudding, because people often quit. They'll try it for a month and then they start to learn to roll and they hate it and they leave, you know? So, mm-hmm. so it's a really, you know, to me, it's just like, you know, that's a specific example in a sport, but it's like, how would it be? Like, I just think about, you know, if I was going to cook a big Christmas or Thanksgiving dinner and I kind of hated it, or like, how would it be if you could make the experience as enjoyful as possible in how you approach doing it, you know, to not assume yeah. that it's stress and a lot of work. What would it look like? Like, how could you play with that so that in fact you would come to the end of it and go, ta-da, like, isn't that great?
That makes so much sense. And again, it's that rewiring of the brain to allow it to see something different. Because like you said, in the very beginning, you know, especially when we have a negative impact from something, that brain, our brain holds on to it as a memory so that it can be like, okay, when this situation happens again, when this sensation comes up again, this is how we should have handled it, or this is how we're going to handle it. And it's the same thing with, you know, driving cars, people that have been in car wrecks, right, that have issues now with driving because their bodies have immediately associated it with that one bad thing. You know, going back to my snowboarding experience, I was doing fantastic. And then I actually, about 2 hours in, caught a bit of snow and I face planted. And I face planted so hard, so hard. I actually knocked the breath out of myself, and like everything in my body hurt. And I just laid there. And I remember getting back up and my husband was like, "Oh my God, are you okay?" And I was like, "I am sore, but I'm good." I was like, "But I already know that I'm afraid that that's going to happen again." And he was like, "Well, what do you want to do?" I was like, "I'm going back up to the hill." And he's like, "What?" I'm like, "I'm going back up to the hill," because that was one incident. And every other time that I came down, I was fine. And I was able to figure out what I did wrong so that I could correct it, because otherwise I would have quit doing it. And then I'll never want to snowboard again, which is actually a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So anyway, I digress. But Cheryl, I would love for, you know, as we come to a close in this episode, you know, you're so right. You know, your brain and your body are connected, and we forget that. So you're exercising all the pieces together, you know. So what would be one thing that you would like to leave the audience with, either a quote or a piece of advice?
Yeah, I think the single, like, best thing you can do for yourself, if you do feel like there's someone in the industry that sort of says, if your body is a brain taxi, you know, like it just gets your brain from one place to another, you know, is the really simple idea of it, putting your attention into your body. And so, you know, if you think about, I mean, I could do this, you know, I grab the water bottle. So what would it be like if I really paused, like really fully felt all the sensation of like how the bottle rounds into the palm of my hand, the pressure of each finger, the real feeling of weight and how you kind of receive it? Like it's almost like slowing yourself down so that your attention is fully part of simple movement. And I have to say, my most regular practice of this is filling and emptying the dishwasher, right? So like grabbing each dish, because if I don't, I tend to clatter them and they, yep, you know, like, you know, I get immediate feedback when I'm out of the zone of paying attention. As a little mini, like we talk about taking breaks to kind of like, you know, let our minds off and you just daydream, or, you know, so often now we're into our phones or like zoning out something on a screen. It's more like zoning in. So take a moment to really zoning in. You're writing something to someone. Can you really zone into like all of the movement, whether you're typing or writing, you know, that's part of that, so that you're actually bringing yourself into yourself as a little movement. That to me, like picking whatever, you know, is your thing. My thing was the dishwasher, because I kind of hate that, and it's kind of the necessary. And so it's like, so this is going to become a little awareness and movement practice that immediately, if I'm out of the zone, the cutlery clashes and the dishes clatter. And so it kind of brings me back to myself. And so, you know, pick one thing to enjoy it. If you have a pet, you know, cat or dog, how much have you really enjoyed the touch of their fur? You know, like bring yourself into those little moments. And then it starts to become really delightful. Like there's kind of a lovely nectary kind of goal, hot honey of awareness thing going on there that, you know, it's simple joy. You don't have to buy anything. You don't have to do anything except be there.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. And that's that's fantastic. Just like, you know, enjoying a cup of coffee or your tea instead of like sucking it down to get on to the next thing. Yeah. I love that. And I think that it's a great way to bring awareness back to what it is that you're doing, so that you are focused on your senses, because we do live in a world where it's so easy to just like pass by something, or all of a sudden you've got like a nick on your hand. Like, what did I even do? What did I touch? What did I, right? Like, there's so many times that happens. So I love that so much about, you know, simplifying that down and really honing in on that. And, you know, please share with us then, Cheryl, where everybody can find you, connect with you, and be in your world.
Yeah, so, you know, all of my stuff's on my website. So it's www.peaceempower.ca, because I'm up in Canada. And so, you know, you can find out all about the classes and the services. I'm just launching a brand new quiz to sort of like, what kind of mover are you, and what's that going to mean for you in 10 years? So that's Happy. On the front page of my website. I have a YouTube channel, Peace and Power Movement Services. ton of free movement exploration videos, and they're all sort of set up in a how-to. So, you know, I think my top one is like how to swing my golf club. You know, all of it's coming from real client questions. LinkedIn is another, you know, if you look for Cheryl Whitelaw, Peace and Power, I'm there as well. Little bit on Facebook, little bit of Instagram, but I lean a little bit more into the YouTube space. So
wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Cheryl. And of course, everyone will have all that information in the show notes for you to make it super simple so you can click on it and find Cheryl really easily. And Cheryl, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today. It was a blast having you, and I love these kinds of conversations as we talked off air as well. So thank you again so much for being a part of the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, Kat. It was tremendous. Thank you.
You are so welcome. And to everybody else out there, I hope you got some amazing takeaways. Maybe start doing a little bit more movement in your day to day to start bringing that presence back into your body and being very aware of not only what is going on in the world around you, but what is going on with your brain and with the motions and the movements that you are or are not doing in our very sedentary life. But anyway, don't forget to find Cheryl. Again, I'll have all that information in the show notes. And until next time, do one thing positive for someone each and every day and see the difference that it makes in your life. So until next time, have a fantastic day.
Hello again, and thank you so much for being a part of the podcast today. If you enjoyed this episode and it brought tons of value, we ask that you please share, like, and subscribe. Your support means the world to us and helps us to reach even more inspiring entrepreneurs who can benefit from these powerful conversations. If you haven't already, be sure to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform, as this feedback is an amazing gift that fuels our growth and helps us to continually improve this podcast. Looking for an extra dose of inspiration and empowerment? Then be sure to connect with me on social media. You can find me at The Lotus Effect, where I share valuable resources and tips while sharing my own journey of being an entrepreneur. And if you're interested in learning more about my coaching programs and services, be sure to check out my website at the-lotus-effect.com. Once again, thank you so much for being a part of Real Chat with Kat. Your presence and support makes all the difference. Remember, whether you find yourself in the depths of the mud or on the path of growth, we all have a unique journey. And just like the lotus, some of us start in the dirtiest of mud, yet as we rise and grow, we blossom into something beautiful, unique, and truly one of a kind. To all of my visionaries out there, keep rising and growing as you create your own Lotus Effect.